In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. The documentary film titled Planet of the Humans, written and directed by Jeff Gibbs and executively produced by Michael Moore, reveals how those in the renewable energy movement have, for decades, tricked, hoodwinked, and lied to the populace about the fossil fuel connection to energy sources such as wind, solar, and biomass. It's tricky because within the documentary there are veiled UN Agenda 21 references, such as drastic population control and reducing consumption. The word sustainable is also used multiple times. Many listeners to this show have known about this level of hypocrisy within the environmental movements, especially in terms of awareness to the ongoing aerosol operations and real-time climate engineering, which couldn't happen without a network of compliant people behind the scenes that include the so-called environmental groups, along with Pentagon generals, propaganda media, NASA scientists, university professors, and TV meteorologists under gag orders. You won't often hear about climate engineering and the deep connection to this set-up-to-fail renewable energy movement, but that's what we're going to talk about with returning guest Dane Wigington. Dane has been on the show in several controversial live debates. He has a background in solar energy and forestry. He's a former employee of the Bechtel Power Corp and is the lead researcher for geoengineeringwatch.org. Dane, welcome back to Another News.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for your continued addressing of the most critical issues we face.
Many types of energy sources in the film were shown to be useless or dependent on fossil fuel production. You had wind and solar power, ethanol, biomass, electric vehicles, seaweed, and batteries that were heavily scrutinized. Before we get into the content of the film, one of the reasons why you became a prominent critic of real-time climate engineering is your background in renewable energy. Would you tell listeners, please, about that?
That's exactly what alerted me to the ongoing atmospheric climate engineering solar radiation management operations to begin with, Jeff, that when I finished my large, completely off-grid home in Northern California and began to lose on some days 60, 70, even 80% of my solar PV uptake from whatever these aircraft were emitting, clearly that could not be condensation. There was no question about that. And that's what initiated my research into the solar radiation management scenario, the spraying of light scattering particles into the atmosphere in the completely misguided and highly destructive attempt to try to block some of the sun's incoming thermal energy. So, yes, climate engineering is greatly diminishing all three primary forms of so-called renewable energy, which is wind power, solar power, and hydropower. So, yes, it is my background that alerted me to the situation, and my life has been focused on this issue ever since, for nearly the last 20 years now.
Well, there are people involved in those renewable energy sources that think they're making things better and their hearts are in the right place, Dane. Would you talk about your thoughts on this film, Planet of the Humans?
Yes, the film has brought to light what we've tried to point out at geoengineeringwatch.org for many years, the fact that so-called renewable energy is at best a hydrocarbon fuel extender, in that the amount of hydrocarbon fuel it takes to manufacture, erect, maintain, and distribute this power is immense, and in no way, shape, or form is this truly quote-unquote renewable or green energy. And you have so many people invested not just in the potential short-term profit from these industries, and I'm not saying that they're not to some degree better than straight fossil fuel burning. There is certainly some advantage in some of these various forms of so-called renewable energy as compared to hydrocarbon, but in no way, shape, or form are they truly, quote, renewable, not even close. And there are many, Jeff, and I think this is the bigger part of the population, there are many who want to believe falsely that we can loot, plunder, and pillage the planet and then magically switch to these so-called renewable energies and save the day. That's not going to happen. And this film very accurately points out what I've seen in the industry working for Bechtel Power. I worked on the SEGS solar plant in Daggett, California, which is featured in this film. It's now an empty field of dust. I worked on that plant myself. I worked in a plant right next door to it for Bechtel Power, also another form of greener energy supposedly produced in this second plant, which is also a field of dust now. Bottom line is, this is simply to try to pacify the population for as long as possible into the false belief that so-called green energy will save us, and that's not going to happen.
When many people became aware of the climate engineering, the real-time climate engineering, these renewable energy systems and operations became very obviously suspect. Now, Dane, maybe we could discuss your take on the renewable energies featured in the film and how they're also inhibited under real-time climate engineering. You mentioned solar power. We can start with solar power. Could you talk about that, please?
Well, in regard to solar power, obviously, and this is such a simple dot to connect for the public, and this is one that's never mentioned by the climate so-called science community when they discuss how beneficial blocking out the sun with light-scattering particles would be. Obviously, that blocks solar PV uptake, and this doesn't mean that we don't have light on the surface of the planet. This is what people need to understand. The only way a solar panel works is direct, unobstructed sunlight. When you obstruct that sunlight, you radically diminish that solar power's ability. So, for example, on a day of heavy aerosol spraying, the solar panel production can drop 80, even 90%. So it virtually negates the viability of solar power. And thus we have massive commercial solar power installations that are producing a fraction of their design output. And this is a huge reason why. And again, solar power is only the tip of the iceberg. When you cover the sky with light scattering particles, you affect convection. That's the rising air that creates wind as it's drawn into those areas of convection. Thus, we have less wind overall on the planet. And this is an overall statement. It doesn't mean there's not extreme winds happening in many places, but it means in an overall context where there was consistent winds because of specific conditions in those regions, those winds are greatly diminishing. I have three wind turbines that are almost useless at this point because the breezes we had 15 to 20 years ago are now almost non-existent. So you're diminishing sun, you're diminishing wind, and these particles also create too many condensation nuclei, and that causes rain to migrate further, or moisture to migrate further in the atmosphere, not to precipitate. And when you block direct sunlight, you diminish the evaporative process. When you diminish wind, as I just explained, you diminish the evaporative process. Again, all of which reduces precipitation, i.e. rain, which in turn reduces hydropower. So sun, wind, and rain, all three being greatly diminished by climate engineering programs that we are being sold by the climate science community as being some sort of saving grace. Unfortunately, not mentioned in the film, because I don't think they could have gotten the film published in Planet of the Humans, but everything portrayed in that film as far as the environmentally destructive aspects of so-called green energy and the unsustainability of so-called renewable energy, all 100% factual.
You have an off-grid home. Well, the energy source to run your home is a combination of things, and then including wind and solar power, but the energy is stored in batteries. And that was mentioned in this documentary as well. Would you please talk about that?
This is a huge aspect of so-called green energy that is completely omitted by almost all sources. You have to be able to store that power for it to be viable. And that is extremely difficult to do. So battery storage is done with various types of battery technology, all of which are highly toxic and destructive to the environment. And the batteries have a very limited lifespan. And some batteries, like the dry cell forms that are used in many of the cell towers and industrial uses, they contain elements like thorium, a highly toxic biohazard. And these batteries are almost impossible to get rid of once they're spent and once their lifespan is over, because these materials are so toxic, any form of, quote, renewable energy must have a means to store it as in a reservoir, if you will. And that is simply, at this point with current technology, almost impossible, and all the elements used are highly toxic.
Cell phone towers, even the smaller 5G antenna, do those have thorium-based batteries powering them?
In most cases, the answer would still be yes, because this is a type of battery that's most functional for that application, as long as the long-term ramifications aren't considered, and they're not considered. We know how industrialized society works. The long-term ramifications are never considered. So, yes, the dry cell, one of the brand manufacturers is called GNB, and these are, again, batteries, and I know this firsthand because I've had a bank of these batteries myself on my own residence that were very difficult to get back into the hands of the only company that will recycle them in the country. A nightmare, an absolute nightmare to get rid of these materials once they're done. And then you have elements, Jeff, that are used, for example, in the production of solar panels that is never mentioned by any of the advocates of the solar industry. And again, it's still more viable than the straight burning of hydrocarbon fuel, but it is by no means renewable or not destructive to the environment. It's in both cases, those aspects must be considered. So you have greenhouse gases like hexafluorethane, for example, that are as much as 17,000 times more potent a greenhouse gas than CO2. Why isn't that mentioned? How is that environmentally friendly? There are no environmentally friendly, quote, green energy scenarios. Electric cars, which all have the same types of batteries I just mentioned, to the production of solar panels, again, highly destructive. I only mentioned one aspect of that destruction. But how many understand this? And we have people like Bill McKibben, the environmental groups like 350.org, receiving funding from institutions like the Rockefeller Foundation. They are simply fulfilling some of their own agendas and not discussing or ever even mentioning aspects like climate engineering, which, again, in so many aspects makes so-called renewable energy moot, or are they mentioning the toxic elements of so-called green energy?
Yes, we'll get to speaking about Bill McKibben. Before that, in this documentary, we're talking about Planet of the Humans that came out, I don't know, maybe a week and a half ago or something. I think it was finished last year in 2019. They talk about biomass, renewable energy sources. One of the ways they generate electricity using biomass is to burn trees. Could you go a little further in describing that system, please?
Absolutely. And in that arena also, I have considerable in-the-field experience, and that the burning of biomass, i.e. trees, to produce electricity and that being sold as so-called renewable energy is a blatant, glaring lie, and never more so than today. Consider this, that, for example, in Northern California, 15 to 20 years ago, planting plugs, which is a form of tree that's designed for replanting, or it's grown for replanting, it's genetically adapted to the area. Myself, I could plant 250 to 300 trees in a day, with a 95% success rate, meaning 95% of those trees made it through the first year. The success rate now is zero, zero. Nothing makes it through the first year. So you cannot reforest. It is not renewable. And the notion you can cut down the forest and simply plant new trees and have them grow up as the previous trees did is an absolute blatant, glaring lie. So at this point, Jeff, industrialized, militarized civilization and the push towards so-called green energy is nothing more than a snake eating its own tail. These various aspects of so-called green energy and the biomass electrical plants are not in any way, shape, or form a renewable energy.
That's a really disturbing observation, Dane, because that is essentially a massive national security issue that the Pentagon and the U.S. government should be profoundly aware of. If there is 0% trees making it through the first year, Now, this is specific to your land area where there's a heavy amount of spraying.
Important point you bring up too, Jeff, because we'll certainly hear from people who say, no, they planted a tree and it's growing and that's fine. And again, we're speaking in specifics here. This is in our region of Northern California. Saplings that are planted in the fall and early winter that formerly had a 95% success rate, 95% making it through the first year, now in this region, the success rate is zero. And that is absolutely factual for this region. There are some regions and some locations of the world where I'm sure some trees can be made to grow. But again, this type of condition is expanding, and climate engineering, again, related to this. Again, we can tie climate engineering into the lack of tree growth here, and the climate engineering is, and this plugs into the solar renewable energy as well, another aspect, Jeff. Climate engineering is destroying the ozone layer. That releases immense amount of UV radiation, which is a very penetrating form of thermal energy, of heat. The hotter the solar panels get, and most people don't know this, the hotter the panels get, the less efficient they are, radically less efficient. So that's yet another aspect which climate engineering is causing, the destruction of the ozone layer, more intense UV radiation, and solar panels thus seeing a greatly diminished efficiency. So from every conceivable direction, climate engineering is reducing any potential that so-called green energy had, and so-called green energy is anything but when we look at the fundamentals.
The ozone holes opening up over the Arctic have been in the news earlier this year and in December as well, I believe. And I didn't see any of those stories until a few weeks ago. But back into this film that we're talking about, Planet of the Humans, directed by Jeff Gibbs and executively produced by Michael Moore. There are divisions now among environmentalists, scientists, and left gatekeepers. One article is titled, Climate Experts Call for Dangerous Michael Moore Film to Be Taken Down. And that might be referencing Josh Fox's, he's the director of Gasland, and he is leading this campaign to have the film taken down and Michael Moore to issue an apology. There's another article titled Planet of the Humans, which takes aim at the green movement, is, quote, full of misinformation, says one online library. Well, the film exposed Bill McKibben several times as someone who couldn't be that naive about this truth regarding renewable energy. Bill McKibben of 350.org is the main target, it seems. Al Gore, Michael Bruin, and the Sierra Club, Michael Bloomberg, Goldman Sachs, Elon Musk and Tesla, The Nature Conservancy, Vinod Khosla, the Union of Concerned Scientists, Van Jones, Richard Blood, and Jeremy Grantham and the Koch brothers are also targeted. We tried to get Bill McKibben on the show for a debate, but he wouldn't respond, and this debate was going to be with our guest here, Dane Wigington. Bill McKibben's response to the film is as follows. I am used to ceaseless harassment and attack from the fossil fuel industry, and I've done my best to ignore a lifetime of death threats from right-wing extremists. It does hurt more to be attacked by others who think of themselves as environmentalists. But Dane, what do you think of Bill McKibben and how he was portrayed in this film?
I think that the amount of criticism McKibben should receive is far greater than what he did receive. McKibben is the epitome of deception and hypocrisy. And we have organizations like 350.org who claim to have a primary purpose of trying to protect the climate, and yet they refuse to acknowledge the single greatest destructive factor of all in regard to the climate, the ongoing intentional climate manipulation operations. That's not the only factor. I'm not saying that. Many people misquote me as that. Every form of human activity that affects the energy balance of the planet is indeed a form of geoengineering and part of the overall equation. But when you have organizations like 350.org that, one, pretend green energy is actually green, which it is not, and two, that ignore the single most destructive human activity ever launched by the human race, the ongoing climate engineering, a.k.a. weather warfare operations, That is simply inexcusable, Jeff. People like McKibben should be exposed for their deception and their hypocrisy, period.
And in this film, he was asked about the renewable status of some of these energy sources. It's hard to believe somebody like him can be this naive. He seemed to be lying in this film, and I think that's important to portray that to viewers right now and people who trusted him. And that was interesting, too. They interviewed people who were at a climate change rally in support of 350.org, I believe, and they were asked about biomass energy sources and if they knew that it was connected to the burning of trees. They didn't know that, Dane.
It's unfortunate we see many people that have joined the, quote, green movement that only want to open their eyes so far, and that needs to change. Unless we open our eyes completely, we can't have a clear picture of the horizon, and thus we find ourselves in the dark place that we are now in. But the bottom line is the gravity and immediacy of what's unfolding, i.e. climate and biosphere collapse, being further fueled by the climate engineering operations, which again, Jeff, if we can equate climate engineering operations to the pharmaceutical industrial approach to the human body, to treat a symptom while making the overall health of that individual worse, not better. And we see the same situation with the climate engineering operations. And when we have documents like, for example, Owning the Weather, U.S. military document, and stating their express goal to control and manipulate the weather, when we look as far back as 1962, President Lyndon Johnson, then vice president, on the record stating that we had the power to control the world's cloud cover then, in 1962, and he said this, quote, verbatim, "He who controls the weather controls the world." This is not about the greater good. It's not about protecting the environment. It's not about protecting the climate. And again, for getting back to these environmental groups like McKibben, for them to pretend these operations aren't ongoing is simply criminal deception. These organizations, again, being supported by the very core criminals that we're all aware of, Koch brothers, Rockefeller Foundation. Why isn't that disclosed? And you see how uncomfortable McKibben was when he was asked about some of these funders, and he pretended not even to really remember that he's receiving the majority of his funds from these funders. Again, McKibben is playing the part of criminal deception. He should be exposed for that.
That's why we wanted to have him on this radio show for a debate, and if listeners didn't hear any of those, Dane Wigington was on the show, I think it was 2018, where we had several debates with geoengineering scientists and global warming scientists. It was a really important live debate series that we did, and you could find those on inothernewsradio.com, but you can also find those posted on your YouTube channel. Is that correct, Dane?
Yes, at geoengineeringwatch.org. You can find those debates. Search geoengineeringwatch.org. Debate, and you should come up with that. And again, one of the primary individuals that you very productively were able to get to debate was Dr. Douglas McMartin, who is a key geoengineering disinformation individual who represents Carnegie Science, Cornell, MIT, and Caltech. And Jeff, as you know, because you moderated those debates, that when confronted with the facts, Dr. McMartin became very uncomfortable, was not willing to engage in any more debates or discussions, and neither were any of his colleagues after that, because they're not used to debating when someone can refute their facts, and so their disinformation is not effective at that point. And so I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but none of them are willing to come back to discuss the issue any further. Is that correct?
The scientist from Ottawa might be, but no, actually, you are correct on that. And one of the issues with Professor Douglas McMartin is that he was sort of mocking you about your solar power uptake.
To a degree, yes. And again, this is where these individuals are willing to say anything that they feel will bolster the position that they've been given by a power structure to deny the climate engineering reality, to try to refute anybody who brings up the horrific consequences of the climate engineering reality, and how these people can live with themselves, Jeff, I'm not sure. I don't understand that kind of mentality to behave in that manner. But yeah, we see that same kind of behavior. And again, don't we see the same thing from McKibben and all the rest, that Again, primary funder of 350.org, McKibben's organization, is the Rockefeller Foundation. How can that be ignored?
I could see how you'd be very concerned about revealing that information, especially if you're trying to get a lot of people to believe that you care about the planet's ecosystems. Getting back to Douglas McMartin for a minute, he was talking about the very thing that we're talking about now, and that is how the spraying of particulates, the dimming of the sun, can affect your solar power uptake. And I think he said something kind of flippant to you in regard to, wait a minute, if there's no sun, then are you talking about that you don't have solar power when it's at night or something like that?
He implied that if there was a 70 or 80% reduction in solar PV uptake, that means it's 70 or 80% darker outside. That's not what I said. I've never said that. What I've stated emphatically and factually is that there can be a 70 or 80% reduction in solar PV uptake because direct sunlight is being obscured. McMartin must know this, so he's simply lying at that point. And that's important for people to understand. Again, blocking of direct sunlight radically reduces solar PV uptake. So if you have an overcast sky with a diffuse light underneath, solar power is almost useless. And that's what solar radiation management does. We have massive deception happening from the so-called climate science community. And Jeff, if we can, and you, I'm not sure if this is appropriate for this broadcast or not, but I want to make mention of this. If we have climate engineering being the single greatest climate disrupting factor of all, and that's not to negate all other forms of human activity and its very detrimental effect on climate. I'm not denying that. I'm simply saying this is the greatest single piece to the puzzle. If you have multiple slices in a pie, this would be the single biggest piece, not being acknowledged. Now we have that same factor reducing all primary forms of so-called renewable energy, reducing sunlight, reducing evaporation, and overall planetary precipitation, thus reducing hydropower, and affecting convection, thus affecting wind, thus reducing wind power. Now, next, in the current crisis that we face globally, the current pandemic, we have now identified as of about a week ago, the coronavirus pathogen has been found attached to pollution particles. How did it get there? And this question needs to be asked. Are the climate engineering atmospheric particulate spraying operations, and that's what these planes are doing, Jeff, as you know, we have the world's most recognized geoengineers like David Keith, who you mentioned before, stating on the record a goal of putting 10 to 20 million tons of aluminum nanoparticulates into the atmosphere annually, every year, 10 to 20 million tons. We know what aluminum does to us, especially when we're inhaling it. And now we have peer-reviewed study to prove that COVID-19 is attached to pollution particles. This question must be asked. Are these spraying operations being used to distribute this pathogen more uniformly around the globe? And to further the basis for that question, we now know that the world's second most recognized geoengineer, Dr. Ken Calgera from Stanford University, former Department of Defense employee, who I know you know because we have a very key interview you did of Dr. Ken Calgera, such an incredibly valuable interview that you conducted, and my deepest gratitude to you for that, where Ken Calgera stated one of his functions for the DOD was to design ways of spraying pathogens into clouds to infect the populations below. And now we know from it's called GatesNotes.com, Bill Gates' website, stating he called Ken Calgera his most amazing teacher. He had a very close relationship with Ken Calgera. Is that not worthy of questioning when we know Gates is involved with the engineering of the gain-of-function aspect of the coronavirus pathogen? Gates seemed to know that a pandemic was coming. He's closely associated with Ken Calgera, who, for the U.S. government, designed ways of spraying pathogens into clouds to infect the populations below. How big is this elephant in the room? How many roads lead back to climate engineering that affects so many aspects of our daily life? And again, not to diverge from Planet of the Humans and that issue itself, how can there be any legitimate discussion about the climate or the state of the climate without first and foremost discussing climate engineering? And in regard to renewable energy, the same equation applies. How can we completely omit the subject of climate engineering when it is radically reducing any viability that so-called renewable energy had in the first place, how can we omit the subject of climate engineering?
Thank you for connecting those dots, especially, Dane, because this show has been on the air for a decade, and one of the reasons it started was to get the information out there about the real-time climate engineering. And one thing that is said a lot on the show is that the aerosol operations are a vector for any type of biological attack. You're spraying material out of an aircraft at various altitude over dense population centers, and no one is saying anything. People think those are condensation trails that, you know, they tell themselves that, or they hope it's nothing but an inert material. But again, this is a vector. And then you have Ken Caldera's quote, you have the new information that you mentioned about the virus actually attaching to pollution particles. Well, these are pollution particles, whatever they continue to spray on us in dense population centers. And I want to even mention that Will Thomas, who was a climate engineering researcher for a number of years, one of the early researchers back in the mid-90s, he's from Canada. He mentioned that the spraying of the skies with aerosol, these types of soft metals and other particulates, affect this layer up in the atmosphere. It's an ancient layer that has prehistoric particulates and pathogens and viruses floating up there, and it brings it down to the surface.
Well, I would argue, again, in those types of narratives are simply a potential way to come up with a scapegoat for pathogens that are being sprayed into the atmosphere. And let's look at what Popular Science published, an article called, I'm not sure if this is the exact title, but E. coli virus found at 33,000 feet. And I'm not sure the Popular Science was knew that they should not venture onto this ground, but they did. And they tried to explain away finding E. coli at 33,000 feet as being perhaps caused by an updraft over a restaurant that was maybe contaminated with E. coli virus. I mean, how absurd is that? And when we look at climate engineering yet again, E. coli has been utilized as an artificial or biological ice nucleating element, an element to spray into the cloud moisture to induce chemical ice nucleation to create a colder, denser layer of air on the ground. It can convert what should have been a liquid precipitation event into a frozen precipitation event. So when we know E. coli is one of the forms of biological ice nucleation utilized by the climate engineers, Popular Science acknowledged it was found at 33,000 feet. And so we have an attempt by the science community to explain away these pathogens that are showing up, like COVID-19, as being some result of nature, when the data makes clear that is absolutely false. Now we have them blaming thawing. You've probably seen this, Jeff. They're blaming the thawing ice caps on a potential source of ancient viruses being released, but no acknowledgement of the fact that viruses are being released from the hundreds of biolabs around the globe. What do we think they're doing? What do we think these biolabs are doing? And here's a headline from several days ago. This is from Newsweek, and finally, you know, again, this lump is getting too hard to hide, but this is from Newsweek, Jeff. Perhaps you've seen this. Dr. Fauci backed controversial Wuhan lab with millions of U.S. dollars for risky coronavirus research. So bottom line is, back to climate engineering, back to the attempt by some of the science community to blame pathogens as coming from the clouds or from frozen ice deposits that are thawing. Let's take a good hard look at using Occam's razor, the principle of Occam's razor. What's the most logical conclusion here? We have biolabs all over the globe engineering these gain of function, which means the jump from animals to humans. Why wouldn't we look there first?
And that's an important point you mentioned about the Will Thomas claim and the scapegoat element. Very important to acknowledge. Now, back to the documentary film that we're talking about, Dane, titled Planet of the Humans. And we don't have to agree on everything here, and I don't agree with Michael Moore's ideology of the pandemic being Mother Nature's response, quote, sending us to our timeout rooms or the UN Agenda 21 references in the film. And this film might be dangerous to those who don't know or are willfully blind to real-time climate engineering and believe what Michael Moore is saying. Hey, look how quickly the Earth recovers when everyone stays in for a while. Well, they're making the case that by purchasing a service or a good, the company is legally bound to provide it, and so the individual is to be blamed, you know, to reduce your consumption. If the blame is continually placed at the doorstep of the individual and not to, for example, government and corporate policy, it's more likely the environmental and energy source problems will continue. And Planet of the Humans might stimulate the viewers to look toward alternative energy solutions that don't require much dependence or none at all from an external source, especially those locked up in warehouses now, Dane, such as the generator that runs on water, the JoCell or Eugene Maloff's work with cold fusion. Those are some pathways. We had on Professor Brendan Brigadier discussing geothermal energy sources, and Dr. Serge King, Mary Hardy, Don and Carol Croft, and John Hutchison talking about earth energy sources to potentially scale up. And Patrick Kelly wrote a free ebook detailing nearly every zero-point energy device and how they work. So it's out there, but it's almost like the Men in Black when people start working on individual zero-point energy devices, then these people show up and they put a chip in you like they did with that inventor of the generator that runs on water.
I'm sure there are many forms of much more viable energy that are being suppressed. I don't think we should doubt that. That being said, would that save us from ourselves at this point when we have societies that are based on the military-industrial complex? And if we had a more efficient, viable form of energy, would that not be used subsequently for even greater forms of weapons of mass destruction? I mean, at this point, it's a mindset, and in regard to responsibility for where we find ourselves, yes, we have a clinically insane power structure. There's no question about that. But we have also majority of populations that are either actively or passively supporting that by complacency, by an unwillingness to investigate the truth, let alone face it. The current paradigm was never sustainable. And although I do agree that there are likely much more viable technologies that have been suppressed, we still have certain fundamental issues with the mindset of the human race that we would have to face, we must face, or we're at the end of the road. So at this point, of the array of challenges we face, Jeff, would it not make sense to, again, for us to focus on the biggest hole in the bottom of the boat of all, to deal with that first? And the reason geoengineeringwatch.org is so focused on the climate engineering assault, because mathematically, statistically speaking, that is the single greatest assault on the planet's life support systems and the entire web of life. And indeed, Jeff, every breath we take, even if they're, aside from a potential for biological elements to be included in these aerosol spraying operations, the elements we know are there, aluminum, barium, strontium, manganese, lead, we're inhaling all of this with every breath we take, nanoparticulates, highly inflammatory to the entire respiratory system, making us much more susceptible, not just to CV19, but to every imaginable form of pathogen and respiratory ailment. So virtually, this is an assault against all life on Earth. And back to the Planet of the Humans film, Michael Moore absolutely knows about climate engineering. We know we had a package of geoengineeringwatch.org data delivered to him, put in his hand. But Michael Moore, like many others in the entertainment industry, knows how long his leash is. Like everybody in elected offices and official offices, agencies, they all know how long their leash is, and they will not touch the climate engineering elephant in the room because they do not want to face the consequences for doing so. And so this massive form of human destruction rages on above our heads. If one looks up, there are many days, Jeff, I know you've seen this, that it looks like we live on another planet. The sky is completely obscured with literally millions of tons of toxic particles, all of which rain down to Earth. That's the bottom line. And back to Planet of the Humans, and the notion that so-called green energy is going to save us, that's a pipe dream. It's not going to happen. Short of some other form of energy and a greatly changed human behavior, we face near-term planetary omnicide.
I like that it did come out, and maybe it is too late for us, but I'm glad that it was exposed and that it's causing controversy and rifts and division among the environmentalists on the left and right and those who thought this was a good thing, because they're saying that this documentary is wrong, by the way. They're saying that Planet of the Humans, revealing the problems with renewable energy sources that we're discussing here, it's incorrect, Dane. Have you looked at some of those criticisms?
I have, but I mean, again, that's simply blatant lying at that point from so-called science communities that would deny the data in the film. The film is accurate. Planet of the Humans is an accurate portrayal of the immense consequences even of so-called green energy. Your listeners can look up, for example, I'm looking at an article right now that's got quite a bit of relevant detail in it called The Toxic Pandora's Box of Solar Panels. There's nothing green about so-called green energy. There's nothing environmentally friendly about so-called environmentally friendly cars. And when people plug that electric car into the charger unit that is producing power from a coal-fired power plant, how green is that? And again, back to the batteries in the car, the maintenance, there's nothing green about any of this. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So I know that people, and there are many, who have to have some false belief to allow them to cope with the darkening horizon. And I would argue this, again, that denial won't save us. Hiding in your cabin on the Titanic won't save you. We have to face reality. And the reality, there is no yet available form of, quote, green energy. And if we don't deal with the military-industrial machine, the juggernaut of insanity that's wreaking havoc all over the globe, and the mentality of loot, plunder, and pillage the planet, loot, plunder, pillage, and pollute until there's nothing left. If we don't change directions completely, Jeff, we're done. And that film affirmed what we have said at geoengineeringwatch.org for over a decade. Again, I live off-grid. I have a background in this industry. But I'm stating firsthand what the facts are. And the facts are that there's nothing truly green about green energy. It's a pipe dream. It's simply a hydrocarbon fuel extender at best.
Dane, you have another documentary of your own coming out soon. Would you tell listeners what that's going to be about?
Geoengineeringwatch.org is in production on a documentary called, quote, The Dimming, referring to solar radiation management, everything we've talked about on this broadcast, the deliberate spraying of light scattering highly toxic particles into the atmosphere to block some of the sun's incoming thermal radiation in a very, very misguided and unimaginably destructive, even deadly, attempt to mask the damage that human activity has done to the planet by further fueling that overall damage. In that film, we have a trailer already out, available on the homepage of geoengineeringwatch.org, that your viewers can see two former U.S. Air Force generals acknowledging the issue, a former presidential cabinet member, a geomicrobiologist that's revealing some of the testing data we have taken from atmospheric testing in a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration flying lab. Bottom line is the climate engineering operations not only making even less viable so-called green energy, these operations are rendering toxic every breath we take. And Jeff, if your listeners want to do a little test of their own that's very revealing, if they go out on a heavily aerosolized day, and that's when the wispy, dirty-looking white canopy is up in the air and you know, the leftover from the expanding jet aircraft spray dispersions, if they go out on a dark night, still night, after these types of operations, shine a very, very bright light into the air straight up, it looks like it's snowing. There's so much particulate matter coming down, it looks like it's snowing. And we know what this particulate matter is because we've tested all over the globe. And it's the elements named in climate engineering patents, aluminum, barium, strontium, manganese, polymer fibers. Not to say that there's not pollution in the air as well. Of course there is, and dust particles. But the intentional dispersion of these other elements I've mentioned is absolutely the largest single contributor to atmospheric particulate pollution. And now we know, again, now we know. We have peer-reviewed study to prove that COVID-19 is attached to these particles. How did it get there? Are they including it in the mix to further distribute that pathogen. And when we know that the uniform eruption of contamination of this pathogen around the globe is highly suspect. We had 25 countries in the course of several days that acknowledged the eruption of this pathogen, second wave of infection, 85 countries. How does that happen unless there's some form of aerial dispersion? And again, we have Bill Gates working with the engineering of these pathogens and Anthony Gates and others like them, corroborating with climate engineers like Ken Caldera. All these dots connect. So bottom line, an experiment your listeners can conduct, shine a bright light up in the sky after heavy aerosolized days, and they will be shocked.
There is not much you can do in terms of protecting yourself from these particulates. This is the column of air that you move around in, you're breathing, and it's getting in your eyes. So if they're putting COVID-19 into the air column and spraying it out, again, here is a massive national security issue that the military needs to take a close look at, because that is an outright attack. And I know it sounds naive to say something like that, but I do think that there are people within the higher ranks of the military that are tired of this and they want to do something. There has been a lot of talk about how clean the air is now since the economies across the world are shut down. And it seems that the pattern of climate engineering over North America that you've deciphered last year is still locked in place. What have you seen in monitoring the ongoing climate engineering right now?
As commercial aircraft were grounded, and we know commercial aircraft are being used in these operations, there was a change in some of the dispersal patterns for a time that we saw, and we're not implicating commercial personnel or commercial pilots, not at all, but their aircraft are absolutely being used. We have film footage of these aircraft dispersing, turning on and off. We have photographs of the nozzles mounted on the pylons of these aircraft. They're being used, period. Now we know that the DOD, Department of Defense, is leasing as many as 800 commercial carrier aircraft, stripping out the interiors, using them for operations over the U.S. and elsewhere. Why are they doing that? Why would they need those aircraft? And again, we know exactly why, but these are aspects the public don't realize. And Jeff, this question comes up, and I'm sure with broadcast will as well, in regard to climate engineering and how destructive it is and how great a threat it is and the COVID virus. The question people always fall back to convince themselves not to look any further is, quote, why would they do this to themselves? We hear that all the time. I'm sure you hear it all the time. It's important to get past that question because we have more than enough data to prove that they, quote, ultimately those who print the money, they're the ones who control militaries, those who control countries, and we're dealing, again, same subject we talked about with Planet of the Humans, Rockefeller Foundation, Rothschilds, and so forth. Those are the people who control the central bankers. They control everything else down the line. So if we look at the fact that biosphere collapse is here, it's here. That's a mathematical, statistical fact that will become ever more evident in the coming weeks and months. So for those in power, they look at this as a risk-to-risk scenario, and the only thing they want to protect is their own power. So when the populations become a greater liability to them, they're going to do something about that. I would argue they already are. In regard to the collapse of the biosphere, it's like a headless, heartless, soulless cancer. Their goal is, again, to keep their power for as long as possible, Jeff, and the weather modification, a.k.a. weather warfare operations, have helped them to do that. So with weather warfare, they've been able to topple countries around the globe, bring them to their knees by cutting off their precipitation and wreaking havoc in a way that they can blame that on the environment, just like they're trying to blame COVID-19 on nature, making nature a scapegoat. So climate engineering is simply a weapon they have not been willing to let go of. It allows them to mask the severity of climate implosion until the last possible moment, thus pacifying populations till the last possible moment. All of that is a part of this equation. So in regard to the excuse that, quote, they wouldn't do this to themselves, they already have. They already are. And Jeff, don't you find it perplexing that all Americans are being told to wear masks? And do we ever, ever see Trump, Fauci, Deborah Birx, any of them, or Birx, do we see any of them wearing masks ever?
No. And interestingly, Dane, it seems like there's a mandate here where all of the news reporters on television have to wear masks while they're doing reports, live reports. And it looks weird.
It is weird. If they're 20 feet away from anybody, they're just on the camera in the middle of nowhere. Why are they wearing a mask? We just got a report from a family member in Lithuania, my family is from there, that their police there arrested someone for jogging alone in a forest with no mask. What would be the reason for that? Now we're hearing that Gavin Newsom is going to perhaps put law enforcement at the entrance to beaches and parks to arrest people if they're out in the open in the sun, where, again, UV kills viruses, period. They use UVC to sterilize labs, and we are getting UVC in the surface now. Why would they try to block people from being out in the open air if they're not around anybody? I mean, this whole thing is about an agenda. I think that's clear. And again, we have to paint the backdrop. As biosphere and climate collapse accelerate, as the planet's ability to produce food for the populations based on the current paradigm, not negating, you know, other forms of energy, as you mentioned, but on the current paradigm, the planet's ability to produce enough to sustain the current population is imploding by the day. Those in power, and Geoengineering Watch has stated this long before the coronavirus happens, as the severity and immediacy of what's unfolding becomes impossible to hide, those in power will play big cards. The CV-19 scenario is one of those cards. So it's a way for them to blame nature and to start locking down society in preparation for what's unfolding so that society doesn't see that coming. It's completely eclipsed at this point. Society's convinced if we could just take care of the CV-19 scenario, everything would be fine and we'll go back to normal. That couldn't be further from the truth.
Absolutely. And I know you're aware of this lawsuit that was coming in April that would challenge putting fluoride into public drinking water. So now that's been postponed, but there are a lot of things like that were coming out in terms of exposing the pedophiles in Hollyweird, the Jeffrey Epstein connections and related lawsuits. There are so many other things, but those were very, very prominent. But here we are.
Let's add on to that before you break that subject. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu about to be indicted on multiple charges. That also was postponed. So there are so many agendas that this virus serves. And again, a primary core aspect is to compel populations to willingly lock themselves down, blaming it on nature and eclipsing the fact that climate and biosphere collapse are here. We face near-term planetary omnicide on the current course. And those in power will do everything they can to mask that from populations until the last possible moment while further fueling the process by programs like climate engineering. Back to the original point of this broadcast, Planet of the Humans, all of this is connected. And that film itself, again, to try to further validate the data in that film, it is 100% valid in more ways, many more ways than one. It shows the mentality of the human race thinking that the same ideology that got us to this place is going to get us out of this place. And that is patently false, that doing more of the same, i.e. putting hydrocarbon energy into these very temporary renewable energy scenarios is going to somehow save us. And that could not be further from the truth. So again, I've recommended that film to everyone. I've sent it to everyone I can. And although it's missing certain key pieces of the puzzle, like the climate engineering component, the data that is there is valid, absolutely accurate, and those institutions and scientists that are trying to discredit that film are simply trying to protect their own personal paradigm in some way, shape, or form.
It's interesting to watch that play out right now. I want to remind listeners that this show has been on the air for a decade discussing this very topic, as disinformation gatekeepers play semantics or outright deny real-time use of weather control technology while claiming to be researching it as a contingency to climate change. And you might ask, how much longer can the veil of lies continue to obscure this reality from good, intelligent, caring humans? And what's sneaky here is the very topic of being environmentally mindful has been hijacked. The anti-climate engineering activists care deeply about the health of the environment, and that's why, like Dane, they're sounding the alarm about the effects of spraying soft metals such as aluminum into the atmosphere and using electromagnetic technology to heat and control weather systems. Dane, thank you again for being on Another News.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for your courage and willingness to continue addressing these issues, and we'll continue to update on the Geoengineering Watch Global Alert News Hour weekly. And to reiterate on this subject, Planet of the Humans, the article I mentioned earlier, and I just saw one more point in that article I wanted to mention again. If your listeners search the toxic Pandora's box of solar panels, scanning down in that article, not only do they name everything we talked about here, the Pandora's box of environmental destruction caused by so-called renewable energy, but further down in the article, we have this Bill Gates idea to stop climate change by blocking out the sun. Again, these components are all connected from the current scenario we face that's locking us down, climate engineering, so-called renewable energy, which, again, is anything but, all of this connected. So that's a good article for your listeners to search and root out. The toxic Pandora's box of solar panels.
Okay, thank you, Dane. We're going to go out with that Ken Calderick clip.
Good idea.
I used to work at Lawrence Livermore National Lab, and I once participated in a meeting where we all sat around the room and thought about how could we manipulate geophysical systems to use it as a weapon. The meeting was about weaponizing geophysical interventions. That means, you know, could you somehow interfere in Earth functioning in a way that you could use it as a military weapon? Could you change climate? What could you do in terms of manipulating the sort of Earth physical systems to as a weapon? Well, you know, some of the ideas were okay, we could blow up hydrogen bombs, you know, underwater, offshore, and make a tidal wave that would go over a city. And, you know, the result was, well, isn't it easier just to drop the hydrogen bombs on the city? You know, that there, now you could imagine, though, say, putting pathogens in a cloud, let the cloud go over somewhere and then would rain down on your enemy and create, you know, do chemical or germ warfare in this kind of way. And that might work against something that would say as big as the former Soviet Union, where, you know, you could be pretty sure that within a few days that cloud would rain out.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.